Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, June 20th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, MISD heads into likely final meeting. Bond committee proposals likely to include ballot items, election date. By Stuart Doreen. The last scheduled meeting of Midland ISD's Community Bond Committee is set to take place at 6 p.m. Tuesday at Legacy High School. The meeting is expected to firm up the committee's presentation to the Midland ISD School Board in July. The presentation will include the committee's facility decisions regarding the building or improvement of high schools, junior highs, and elementary schools, along with decisions about security and deferred maintenance. The committee also will decide on the month to hold a bond election, either November, May 2024, or November 2024. Should the bond steering committee need more time, then a meeting is tentatively scheduled for July 17th. Midland ISD officials said last week that a presentation to the board is scheduled to take place at the July 25th MISD board meeting. Here are things to know as the Midland ISD Community Bond Committee heads down the stretch and makes decisions regarding a potential bond referendum. Based on grade reconfiguration. At the last meeting of the Bond Committee, officials said the process on Tuesday would be similar to someone going through an Amazon shopping cart to decide what to purchase. Through the committee meetings, grade reconfiguration has been used as a main reason for new or upgrading facilities. Committee members have shown interest in bringing freshmen onto senior high campuses, sixth graders into junior high schools, and potentially add room for more pre-K on Midland ISD elementary campuses. The items most likely to make it through the shopping cart evaluation period are the building of two 4,200-seat high schools in East and West Midland. The district's middle school campuses would include San Jacinto Junior High, Goddard Junior High, Alamo Junior High, and Abel Junior High. The committee would then propose turning Legacy High School and Midland Freshman High School into middle schools. Expected student growth of more than 4,000 students over the next 10 years and the reduction of the 134 portable classrooms being used are also reasons for building projects proposed. Cost and tax impact. Midland voters have never faced a billion-dollar bond. In 2019, Midland ISD put a $569 million bond in front of the voters that featured the building of two new high schools in the exact same locations as the committee is considering this time, near the Scarborough Sports Complex in West Midland and at Ranchland Hills Golf Club. The largest bond passed by Midland voters took place in 2012, $163 million. Midland voters have approved three bonds of $100 million or more in the city's history. The last time the committee met, it had built a shopping cart of up to $900 million for high schools along with indoor athletic facilities, $224.4 million for middle school improvements, $59.7 million for a new elementary school in Northeast Midland, $50 million to $100 million for district-wide deferred maintenance and improvements to current facilities, $41.8 million for safety, security, and accessibility. Should Midland ISD put all those items on a referendum, That would be $1.275 billion to $1.325 billion in costs, not including interest. Midland ISD uses $341,000 as the valuation of the average home in Midland. The state currently has a $40,000 exemption for homesteads, and Midland ISD has an additional homestead exemption of 10%. Increases or decreases to the valuation of one's property are not factored in. A home valued at $341,000 with the state homestead exemption $40,000 and Midland ISD homestead exemption $34,100 would have a $266,900 taxable value for the purposes of determining the school district's total tax payment. Using a maintenance and operations M&O rate of 0.8446 per $100 valuation and an interest and sinking I&S rate of 0.0702, a total tax payment is $2,441.59. At a meeting last week with community members at Legacy High School, Midland ISD officials reported passage of those items in the current shopping cart would be $567.12 a year, a 23.22% increase over the total tax payment for fiscal year 2023. Midland ISD officials have stated they hope legislative actions during the special sessions this spring and summer will decrease Midland ISD's tax rate, so an increase of $567.12 a year isn't as impactful. Multiple propositions? Midland ISD Superintendent Stephanie Howard stated multiple propositions are possible. She stated last week that the committee will think about what needs to be put together and what can be separated. She doubted there is a scenario that allows for high school and middle school facility requests to be on different propositions. In May, five area communities passed all 11 propositions on their respective ballots, totaling more than $740 million. Those included victories in Pecos Toya Barstow ISD, more than $446 million, Andrews ISD, $156.7 million, and Crane ISD, $68 million, Coahoma ISD, and Wink Loving ISD. A committee facilitator, N2 Learning, helped Plano ISD with a bond referendum in 2022. That referendum included four propositions, two of which passed. This article is entitled, Donors Choose. Bunch Elementary Teacher Seeks STEAM Supplies, by Ben Schaffer. Mrs. Brown, a teacher at Bunch Elementary School, is seeking art supplies for a STEAM, Science, Tech, Engineering, Art, and Math Center. The project expires on October 6th. There is $562 needed to fully fund it. The art supplies requested will help build the art section in STEAM to incorporate ingenious ways of problem solving and presenting information, Brown posted on DonorsChoose.com. Online, donorschoose.org/project/full-steam-ahead-art-supplies-4-hour-s/742-2028/. This article is entitled MPD, Shooting Death in Central Midland, Result of Self-Defense, by the Midland Reporter-Telegram. Midland police reported Monday that one man is dead after he entered a Central Midland home and assaulted a male resident. Initial investigation revealed Bradley Joe Smith entered a home in the 900 block of North D Street and began assaulting a male resident, MPD reported. In an act of apparent self-defense, the homeowner shot the suspect. At approximately 5:50 p.m. on Sunday, officers with the Midland Police Department responded to a call regarding a gunshot victim. Smith, 61, was located on the scene, deceased with gunshot wounds. The next of kin has been notified. The investigation is ongoing. This article is entitled NWS, 111 degree day in Midland, forecast. National Weather Service, streak of 100 degree days likely to reach at least 12. By Stuart Doreen. The National Weather Service is showing Midland's streak of 100 degrees could hit at least 12 days through next Monday, June 26th. And along the way, high temperatures are forecast to reach at least 105 degrees 7 times. But does the National Weather Service show 110 degrees in the future at Midland International? On Monday, it did. The thermometer is expected to flirt with 110 degrees, including 5 days with high temperatures of 107 degrees or warmer. The hottest days, according to the National Weather Service, are expected to be Monday, 108 degrees, Wednesday, 108 degrees, and Saturday, 109 degrees, and Sunday, 111 degrees. Which would tie for the sixth warmest day in Midland's history. The National Weather Service reports the average high for June 18th to June 26th is typically 96 degrees. The high on Monday tied a record for June 19th, 108 degrees, set in 2011. The National Weather Service showed a high of 107 degrees expected for Tuesday. Hot is hot, and should the National Weather Service forecast hold true, then June 2023 will at least tie for third all-time for consecutive 100-degree days in Midland's history. The all-time record is 14 straight days set in June 1998 and June 2011. Lastly, here's a little bit of history about Midland's hottest days on record. There have been 11 days in Midland's history when the thermometer reached at least 111 degrees. And, for those keeping track, a majority of those hottest days happened from 1989 to 1998, including the two hottest days on record, 116 degrees on June 27, 1994, and 114 degrees on June 28, 1994. This article is entitled, Photographer Makes Difference for Animals Needing a Home, by Stuart Doreen. No one has put a face on Midland's shelter animals like Tasha Sport. A veteran of Midland's animal rescue community, Sport has not only been an advocate for dogs and cats looking for their forever home, but has put her considerable talents toward the mission. In fact, it has changed how Midlanders see those animals. Gone are the sad lineup pictures of the animals, cue the Sarah McLachlan song Angel. Instead, she has brought costumes and weekly themes to the animal showcase, showing off the personality of an animal ready to leave the Midland Animal Shelter for a living room and backyard of a responsible pet owner. With themes related to Christmas, Thanksgiving, and other calendar dates, along with photos of Midland PD's finest and sports teams, sports photography has changed the way Midland Animal Shelter has marketed its residents. Her work appears weekly on Facebook pages such as those belonging to the City of Midland, Midland Animal Shelter Adoptables, MASA, Permian Basin Animal Advocates, and the Midland Reporter-Telegram. In retrospect, Sport's work showcasing the fur babies was naturally going to be a hit. Those walking the halls of the Animal Services Building can see her work, including animals at iconic Midland locations like the Duck Pond, the Petroleum Museum, and Yucca Theater, on the walls of the multi-billion-dollar center. My photos will show how they will interact with family, how they behave, Sports said. I really enjoyed the lemonade stand and Memorial Day, the military aspect to it, with the animals in military garb. There is meaning in all of them, including the Dr. Seuss and Top Gun shoots, among others, Sport said. Sport is the operator of TashaSportPhotography.com, a site that shows off more of her considerable talents. Sport told the reporter Telegram about the unique opportunity for pet owners to take part in photo sessions at a pet's end of life. The idea is based off the Tilly Project. TheTillyProject.org. Sport said, "The sessions that memorialize the relationship a person has with their pet can be emotional, difficult, and extremely rewarding." She recommends pictures with animals, not necessarily in their last days. She even talked about a Tilly Project photo shoot with a person and their horse. "Most are delivered in black and white," Sport said. "They are timeless and meaningful." Sport, 47, was born and raised in Midland. She and her husband have a home with 5 dogs, 4 cats, and 2 turtles. Her time in the animal rescue business includes presiding as the chair of the City of Midland Animal Services Advisory Committee and working with nonprofits like Midland Humane Coalition, Sassy's Dog Rescue, MASA, and PBAA. She helped facilitate Rescue Runners, the twice-a-month activity when people volunteer walking, running dogs from the shelter to a nearby park. Those interested in helping to socialize animals through Rescue Runners can go to Midland Animal Shelter on the first and third Saturdays of the month from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Mainly, she is for activism without the drama. She is for those without considerable talents around Midland's rescue community working together. One will see Sport contribute by chairing a meeting, sitting through a council session, and, of course, taking her impactful pictures. "A good photo can be the difference in a dog getting a home or not," she said. Which is why Midland is lucky to have Sport contributing when Midland's shelter population needs her most. This article is entitled "Reconstruction of South County Road 1210 to Take Place" by Stuart Doreen. Midland County is announcing the reconstruction of South County Road 1210 for drainage improvements. Work will begin on July 5th and is scheduled to be completed in December 2023. This project includes removal and replacement of the asphalt and introduction of new and larger drainage structures throughout the limits of the project. The limits of this work are from Interstate 20 Service Road south to the Dollar General. This work is being done while the Texas Department of Transportation will be working on the new overpass at I-20 and Midkiff Road. Traffic will be one lane, two-way traffic during construction hours. This article is entitled "Study: 21% of Midland Teens Work Summer Jobs" by Ben Schaffer. Midland teenagers make an average of $1,077 monthly working summer jobs, compared to the national average of $880, according to a recent Cool Jobs study. According to the study, 21% of Midland teens, 2,593 total, are working summer jobs. Out of the 119 small metropolitan areas included in the study, Midland ranks 27th in average monthly earnings for teens working summer jobs. Odessa ranks 19th in the same category. Midland and Odessa are the only 2 Texas cities ranked in the top 30. The highest average monthly earnings for teens working jobs is found in Elkhart, Goshen, Indiana, where teens make $1,691 per month on average. this article is entitled, Russia's Oil Giant Urges OPEC Allies to Track Exports, Not Just Output, by Bloomberg News. OPEC and its allies need to monitor not only production of the organization's member countries, but also their exports, according to Igor Sechin, head of Russian oil giant Rosneft PJSC. Some nations in the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries send as much as 90% of their output abroad, using other types of fuel for domestic consumption, said Sechin, a key ally of President Vladimir Putin and formerly a critic of Russia's cooperation with the oil alliance. For Russia, the share of crude exports in production is just 50%, Sechin said at a panel session of St. Petersburg International Economic Forum on Saturday. This puts our country at a disadvantage, given the current monitoring mechanism in OPEC Plus, he said. It seems appropriate to consider monitoring not only the production quotas, but also the oil exports, taking into account different sizes of domestic markets. Sechin's call comes as Russian oil watchers remain doubtful of Moscow's commitment to voluntary production cuts. Russia was the first OPEC Plus nation to announce crude output cuts earlier this year, aiming to bolster demand for its oil amid Western sanctions, including fuel price caps. Moscow pledged to cut its output by 500,000 barrels a day from February and maintain that level through 2024. However, the Russian government has made the nation's oil production data classified, making it difficult to assess the progress of the cuts beyond assurances from energy officials. While Deputy Prime Minister Alexander Novak on numerous occasions said Russia had achieved the pledged output level in spring, the nation's seaborne exports, a key gauge of production levels, have remained robust. Earlier this month, OPEC secondary sources revised the Russian output baseline to 9.949 million barrels a day. The upward revision makes it easier for Russia to stick to production curbs amid scrutiny and calls for greater data transparency. It's getting more difficult for OPEC to reach consensus because of different economic structures and diverging output trends in the member states, according to Sechin. The Middle Eastern OPEC countries are increasing their production and diversifying their economies, developing the non-oil sector, Sechin said. The African OPEC nations are steadily decreasing output, losing their share on the global oil market, he said. This article is entitled, Woman's Charges Upgraded After Infant Dies, by Mercedes Cordero. Charges for a 36-year-old Odessa woman involved in a fatal drunk driving accident last week have been upgraded, according to the city of Odessa. The Odessa Police Department issued warrants for Daisy Cordero for intoxication manslaughter and leaving the scene of an accident involving death, both second-degree felonies. A 6-week-old suffered life-threatening injuries and was airlifted to a Lubbock hospital, where she later died from her injuries, according to the city of Odessa. The infant, identified as Eliana Garcia by the city of Odessa, was in the back seat of a vehicle stopped at a red light when Cordero rear-ended the vehicle. The accident happened at the intersection of Maple Avenue and Grandview Avenue at about 11:17 p.m. on June 12th, according to a previous Odessa Police Department report. The infant's mother, identified as Nalali Mendoza, 19, and a 1-year-old boy were transported to Medical Center Hospital, where they were treated for their injuries. Cordero was originally charged with intoxication assault causing serious bodily injuries, a third-degree felony, unlawful carrying of a weapon, Class A misdemeanor, accident involving serious bodily injuries, a third-degree felony, and bribery. She is being held in the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. Mendoza has created a GoFundMe at https://bit.ly/3jflktb. This column is called Opinion. It is entitled A Platform for Would-Be School Board Candidates by Stuart Doreen, Midland Reporter Telegram editor. I am not running for Brian Murray's former seat on the Midland ISD School Board. My job won't allow it, but in today's opus, I will provide a platform as if I were running. And, if one follows it, governance of Midland Independent School District would be better. First, the job is entirely about student outcomes. Want to continue the fight about school names, go crazy about school bonds, or be overly concerned about social and emotional learning? Find something else to do. The Midland ISD School Board should be worried about student outcomes, and student outcomes. We need to improve here, and this should be the obsession for District 7's next representative. Second, demand discipline returns to campuses across Midland. Want to improve student outcomes? Calling on the district to produce a comprehensive discipline strategy is a great start. Let's put more security on secondary campuses, enforce regulations currently on the books about the dress code, force students to put away those cell phones, and put teeth in enforcement. If a student isn't wanting to act in a way that creates an atmosphere for improved student outcomes, there will be real consequences. We shouldn't allow students to dress like cats. Midland ISD doesn't need TikTok content on demand, and our children don't need bad actors overwhelming their teachers. Third, we don't rubber-stamp central administration decisions. Midland ISD student outcomes plummeted because central administration wasn't capable of dealing with changing demographics and negative academic trends taking place in the district prior to COVID. Until a superintendent, including an incredibly popular superintendent like Stephanie Howard, shows a consistent excellence when it comes to student outcomes, an educated board should require a detailed explanation on how all agenda items, if necessary, will improve student outcomes. Fourth, stop trashing 1882 schools. Members of this school board have decided to challenge the business and philanthropic community inside Midland on in-district charters like Idea Travis, Young Women's Leadership Academy, and Third Futures Houston Collegiate Prep. Stop the attack on 1882s. They have become a valuable asset to Midland ISD, improving student outcomes as designed. Board members should also remember, more are coming, and the district needs to show it can partner with those other operators or deal with the loss of student population and state funding that accompanies parents choosing to send their students to campuses that produce results. The in-district charters are not the enemy. Stop treating them like they are. Fifth, stop using Robin Hood as an excuse. When Rod Schroeder came down to Midland ISD as an interim superintendent during the last decade, he told board members, "There are no more excuses for why students can't achieve great things." We have forgotten that point. No excuses also extends to Robin Hood, the sending of money to Austin to be distributed to poorer districts. The law isn't changing anytime soon. And as long as oil is good and property valuations are high, Midland ISD will be among the hundreds of schools across the state sending that check to Austin. Would you prefer valuations drop to a pre-Robin Hood level? The secret that many don't talk about is the net revenue, total revenue minus the Robin Hood payment, is still much higher than it has ever been. And the district's savings account is close to $200 million. Money is not the reason student outcomes have not improved. Sixth, find out what works and stick with it. We need stability in curriculum inside the district because change isn't good for teachers needing to prepare students for college and career. A child starting Midland ISD in 2016 has been through 6 permanent or interim superintendents and, unfortunately, numerous of the latest and greatest programs. In 2016, there was not a high-performing school district. It is hard to believe that instability in leadership and programs has helped the student. And we know that COVID also did no favors to those attempting an academic rebound like no other in the community's history. That student, who was in kindergarten in 2016, should be going into the 7th grade this fall. It is hard to think that student is where he or she should be. That is a taste of what my platform would be. Those who plan on seeking an appointment or running for school board in November need to be armed with similar student outcome-based principles. If not, it is hard to see the next 10 years going any better than the last 10, and the 10 before that. And that is why people should be running for the school board. All other reasons won't get us any closer to where we need to be. The district has reported those interested individuals who meet the eligibility requirements are encouraged to apply. Additional details and application information can be found at midlandisd.net/board. Applications are due by 4 p.m. Tuesday, June 20th, the district noted. The Reporter-Telegram has not yet learned when the filing period for November's special election will be. This is the Business and Oil page. This column is called Opinion. It is entitled, Texas Economy Analysis Finds Reasons for Optimism, by Dean Foreman, Texas Oil and Gas Association. The Dallas Federal Reserve Bank reported in May that Texas's economic expansion has slowed and the business outlook has weakened. While this appears to be an accurate reading of the economic statistics, a broader context offers some reasons for optimism. Texas's economy led the nation's growth for the 2 most recent quarters, growing at an average annual pace of 7.6%. or more than 2.5 times the U.S. average, over the latter half of 2022, per the Bureau of Economic Analysis, BEA. What goes up generally must come down, so a slowing expansion is both typical and healthy following periods of rapid expansion. In fact, excluding the post-pandemic rebound, Texas's past 2 quarters are the state's best performance since late 2014 and early 2015. And Texas ended 2022 with a new record high state GDP of $1.92 trillion. Slowing from an all-time high is more like a step down from a mountaintop rather than a bearish sign for the future. Digging into the industry drivers, the sources of the state's strength are even clearer, with Texas's real GDP achieving a record high of $1.92 trillion in Q4 of 2022, making it the fastest-growing state over the second half of 2022. Per the BEA, over 70% of real growth in the second half of 2022 was driven by oil and natural gas-related industry segments. And industry direct employment rose by 8.3% year over year to 477,327 in Q4 of 2022, generating $13.8 billion in wages, per Texas Workforce Commission data. Similar to 2014-2015, the oil and natural gas-related sectors of Texas's economy contributed strongly and drove over 70% of real growth over the latter half of 2022. The recent oil and natural gas expansion has also brought significant gains in employment and wages, to the tune of plus 8.3% year-over-year in job growth and plus 11.0% year-over-year in wage growth in Q4 2022. This growth occurred despite oil prices that were on par with their median since 2006, adjusted for price inflation, which is an indication that Texas has become a relatively more important energy source. Specifically, Texas's shares of U.S. oil and natural gas production have risen to over 43% of U.S. crude oil production and 26.5% of natural gas production. A potential sign of slowing, however, stems from recent reports that drilling rig counts decreased by 7.7% year-to-date in Texas, to 347 active rigs as of June 9th, from 376 rigs as of December 30, 2022, per Baker Hughes. However, by comparison, rig counts fell by 23.8% in Colorado, 36.2% in Oklahoma, and 15% in Wyoming over the same period. Consequently, Texas oil and natural gas has fared relatively well during this time, as the state's production levels of oil and natural gas have achieved new record highs so far in 2023, per the U.S. Energy Information Administration, EIA. These signs of both absolute and relative strength amid broader economic uncertainties are encouraging indicators and cause for optimism that Texas oil and natural gas will continue to drive growth going forward. Dean Foreman is the chief economist at the Texas Oil and Gas Association.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I'm reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, June 20th. OPD investigating shots fired. The Odessa Police Department is investigating shots fired at Walmart, 2450 Northwest Loop 338. The incident occurred at 2:44 p.m. Monday. Investigation revealed that an unknown male subject was shooting a gun in the parking lot near the garden center. The suspect fled the scene on foot before police arrived. There were no reports of any injuries, and the OPD is attempting to search for the suspect at this time. Anyone with information in reference to this incident is encouraged to contact OPD at 432-333-3641 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS. The investigation is ongoing. Texas game wardens assist Perryton tornado response. Texas game wardens responded June 15th to a strong thunderstorm that developed into an EF tornado, striking the town of Perryton. In addition to causing widespread property damage, the storm claimed three lives and injured hundreds of others. Through the aftermath, wardens remained on scene, assisting local and state first responders with search and rescue efforts, as well as traffic enforcement and community support. The destruction caused by the tornado is very surreal. It ripped through Perryton and did not discriminate. It has deeply affected so many people's lives. Ogletree County Game Warden Jeremy Smallwalk, said in a news release, "I'm proud to be part of such a resilient community that has come together without fail in moments of need. This is a humbling experience, and as a community, we are eager to rebuild the city we love so much. Due to the devastation caused by the tornado, Texas Governor Greg Abbott traveled to Perryton and signed a disaster declaration for Ogletree County June 17th. Texas game wardens will remain on scene in Perryton for the next several days, assisting local and state partners with law enforcement services as the people of Perryton continue cleanup and rebuilding efforts." Recycling Center reopens. The Recycling Center, also known as the Time Machine, reopened Monday. Renovations have been underway and will continue on the facility. It includes a new 6-foot fence, one entry and exit gate, as well as some new paint projects. The Recycling Center will also now have the same hours as the Household Hazardous Waste Citizen Bulk Drop-Off Facility, which are Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Saturday 8 a.m. to noon. Citizens can drop off within these hours to keep recyclables from being contaminated. Contamination is where people are accidentally mixing trash with recyclables. As a result, they can no longer be recycled. Here's what will be available: 4 cardboard containers, 4 plastic containers, 2 containers for mixed paper and newspaper. Residents will be able to park in the same spots and walk the materials to the bins. Visit tinyurl.com/5yta5pp9. Charges upgraded in death of 1-month-old. The Odessa Police Department reported upgrading charges on Odessan Daisy Cordero, 36, who is accused of driving while intoxicated last week and crashing into a car with an Odessa mom and her young children. Cordero was arrested late June 12th following a 2-vehicle crash that resulted in the death of Elena Garcia, a 1-month-old girl. According to the city of Odessa, Cordero was driving a Lexus RX350 when she rear-ended a Chevrolet Cruze that had stopped for a red light on Grandview at Maple Avenue around 11:15 p.m. The baby was in the back seat of the Chevy, along with a 1-year-old boy. According to the city, the boy and the 19-year-old driver of the Chevy were taken to Medical Center Hospital and treated for their injuries. The baby was flown to Lubbock Hospital, where she later died. Cordero was originally arrested on suspicion of intoxication assault, causing serious bodily injury, unlawful carrying of a weapon, accident involving serious bodily injuries, and bribery. Her charges were upgraded to leaving the scene of an accident involving death and intoxication manslaughter. She remains in the Ector County Jail. Jail records show Cordero was arrested in May on a possession of a controlled substance charge. About $17,000 has been raised to help the family of Elena. Donations for Elena Garcia and the family can be made at tinyurl.com/AU8VFAY6. Kate's fungal meningitis outbreak. In May of this year, 2 surgery centers in Matamoros, Mexico, Riverside Surgical Center and Clinica K3, were closed because of an outbreak of fungal meningitis. The common denominator between everyone diagnosed is they all received epidural anesthesia at one of these 2 surgical centers for their procedure. Experts are still trying to figure out if the fungus that caused the infections came from contaminated supplies used in the insertion of the epidurals or if contaminated medications were injected. Part of the issue with this outbreak is the time between when a person is infected and when they show symptoms can be months long. That's why health care providers are concerned about people who had epidurals in these clinics as far back as January of this year. I am writing about this outbreak to help spread the word to those who may be affected and to help everyone understand that meningitis is and why it is a huge concern. The meninges are tough layers of tissue that cover the brain and spinal cord to help protect them. There are three layers of tissues that comprise the meninges. In epidural anesthesia, narcotics, numbing medications, and/or anesthetic agents are injected into the lower spinal canal between the bones, tendons, and muscles, and the outermost layer of the meninges. That spot is called the epidural space. Once injected, those drugs are slowly absorbed across the meninges into the nerves of the spinal cord, causing the anesthetic effects needed. If anything used to access the epidural space or the medications injected are contaminated with bacteria, viruses, fungi, or other microorganisms, it can cause an infection of that space, and that infection can easily spread to the meninges. An infection of the meninges is called meningitis. The meninges are in many ways like the silver skin you will sometimes find on a piece of pork or beef. That tissue is very tough and protective of the structures around it. For the most part, that is a very good thing, but if that tissue gets infected, the same structure that makes it tough also makes it hard for the body to fight an infection of those tissues. The other bad thing is that when tissues get infected, it swells. Think about if you get an infection cut on your hand, the edges of the wound will swell. Normally, that is a good thing because the swelling helps the body bring more infection-fighting cells and chemicals to the site of the infection. But with the meninges, that same swelling can be a very bad thing. It's because the meninges aren't the only things protecting the brain and spinal cord. Those structures are also protected by the bones of the skull and spine. When the meninges swell, because everything is surrounded by bone, the swelling can crush the delicate nerves that make up the brain and spinal cord. That crushing can cause brain or spinal cord damage and even death. Symptoms of meningitis include fever, headache, a stiff neck, nausea and vomiting, light sensitivity, confusion, and other forms of altered mental state. Testing is done with MRI and by doing a procedure called a lumbar puncture, where cerebrospinal fluid, the fluid that surrounds the brain and spinal cord between the meninges, is removed and tested for chemicals and microorganisms. Treatment of fungal meningitis is with high-dose antifungal medications over several weeks or even months. While some types of meningitis can be spread from person to person, fungal meningitis cannot. Fungal meningitis happens when a fungal infection from elsewhere in the body spreads to the meninges surrounding the brain or spinal cord. In this outbreak, the fungus seems to have been directly injected into the epidural space. An estimated 200 Americans went to those surgery centers between January and when they closed in May to have various procedures with epidural anesthesia. Those patients are at severe risk for fungal meningitis. So far, 4 people in the U.S. have died because of this outbreak. In other fungal meningitis outbreaks, half of the people who became infected died. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, recommends that anyone who had a procedure in those surgery centers after January 1, 2023 and have epidural anesthesia go to an emergency room to get tested for the infection, even if they are not having symptoms. If you or someone you love has been to one of those surgery centers during that time, please go to an emergency room as soon as possible. The CDC is also recommending that anyone going to that area for health care practice enhanced precautions because they still haven't figured out exactly where the source of the fungus has come from in terms of supplies or medication. Rig Zone Career Fair. Rig Zone has scheduled a career fair from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. June 22nd at the Midland County Horseshoe Pavilion, 2514 Arena Trail, Midland. There will be on-site interviews and hiring on the spot for hundreds of job opportunities. For more information or to register, visit tinyurl.com/5n6twypf. Madagascar the Musical. The Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North FM 1788 Midland, has scheduled Madagascar the Musical June 21st. The doors will open at 6 p.m. and the event will start at 7 p.m. Visit tinyurl.com/fmwc4f5y. MISD looks for solutions as student growth continues. Portable classrooms meet some needs but present challenges as well. We anticipate MISD enrollment to grow by 4,200 students or more over the next 10 years, said Superintendent Stephanie Howard in a news release. MISD high schools are already above the capacities set many decades ago, long before the miracle of horizontal drilling and hydraulic fracturing opened our storied oil fields even wider and drew thousands of families to Midland seeking greater opportunities and better lives, the release said. With so many new people already here and many more on the way, the question remains, can we fit more students in already overcrowded facilities? Portables, a temporary turned long-term solution. The growing wave of incoming students has been a struggle. We have not passed a sizable secondary bond since 2012, so we are already struggling with capacity issues and aging facilities, Howard said. Who saw firsthand the influx of new students back when she was principal at Legacy High School and amid the early '10s oil boom? Howard returned to MISD in January in her decade-away secondary and elementary campuses have implemented what's meant to be a non-permanent solution that has only grown portable classrooms. MISD currently has 134 portables, those khaki-colored shed-like buildings detached from main buildings that you've no doubt seen dot campuses district-wide. MISD has turned to portables for more than 25 years in response to Midland's unprecedented growth. Groundwork is underway for 1,200 housing lots within MISD's district boundaries, with 10 active subdivisions under construction and 7 more in the planning stages, according to the press release. It's new housing for new families with new children in Midland. Portables do not offer a viable solution for creating an impactful, permanent space for thousands of future Bulldogs and future Rebels. They are a bandage for overcrowding, but don't address the core issues in other key areas of student life. The size of the cafeteria and library, the number of restrooms, nor extracurricular facilities. Portables offer no solution for the additional parking and drop-off pickup locations needed to accommodate an increased student population. Not billed for tech. On June 20th, 1969, Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin made history when they were the first people to walk on the moon. About 20 years earlier, a New Midland High opened its door on Illinois Avenue long before the nascent computer technology that helped send men into space, and a time when the tech landscape we have today only existed in the imaginations of science fiction writers and a handful of visionaries. In reality, MISD can't support today's technological demands. For Legacy High, the situation is the same. LHS predates the moon landing by about a decade, and the debut of the iPhone in 2007 by about 40 years. The campus was not built to support today's technology, and as MHS and LHS permanent structures age, along with their portables, so too does their ability to keep up with tech's ever-quickening pace and evolution. Keeping kids safe, campus safety and security concerns have changed greatly and rapidly. Buildings aren't designed with modern solutions in mind because neither the issues nor technology were reality back then. As we work through this bond planning process and design future facilities, the integration of safety and security will be at the forefront of the team's work, Howard said in the release. More students in already crowded spaces make monitoring more difficult, and placing students in detached portable classrooms only compounds this problem. Solutions being considered. Across MISD, many campuses, particularly middle school and high schools, are either at or over capacity. A solution is a combination of new facilities and grade reconfiguration. MISD needs two new high schools that can accommodate 4,200 students each in order to meet future enrollment growth. By constructing new homes for the Rebels and the Bulldogs, former facilities such as Midland Freshman and the current LHS campus can be converted into middle schools, raising the number of campuses serving 7th and 8th graders to 6 or more, the release said. Furthermore, this plan could see 6th graders moving into middle schools, opening many new seats for elementary schools, which would serve pre-kindergartner through 5th grade. 9th graders who are currently at separate freshman high schools would be integrated into the high schools, creating more traditional 9 through 12 facilities. Now is the time to make more room. Growth at MISD is happening now. Peak enrollment in the 2022-23 school year was 27,821, an increase of more than 1,400 students in a single year. District demographers anticipate MISD will have more than 32,000 students in 2032-33, when today's pre-kindergartners will be freshmen. At the current rate, there won't be room for them, at least not in a permanent facility. Now is the time to create more permanent space. Midland's growth indicates that its economy is healthy, which has sustained for more than a decade and is expected to continue far into the future. We want to be prepared and ensure our facilities can support the growth we are seeing and anticipate in coming years, Howard said, adding that MISD is committed to maintaining the small-town values that have long been a hallmark of the district. While Midland has grown, the small-town values and the way we work together and treat one another has not changed, Howard said, even with the growth on our campuses. It is the daily interaction between teachers and students that creates the personal feel that is so critical to our success. We will always work to maintain our small-town feel and values related to knowing our students and employees.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.